It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you doing?
Morena, Tessa. Good, good. I didn't go out partying last night. I know there were some people waiting till 11:59 to go out to the local nightclub or bar, but no.
That wasn't you last night?
That wasn't me. No, I had the normal work day. I got into work at 6:30, got home at 9 o'clock, and watched the news on had a glass of wine and went to sleep.
Yeah, that sounds lovely, to be honest. So obviously we have moved to level one overnight, and we've had something like, I think, 18 or 17 days since a new case. So how is this affecting the council facilities?
Good. Look, I mean, the really important change from my point of view is that we no longer have to have a physical separation on buses, trains and ferries. Mm. So that's going to make our transport services, that's going to bring it back to being economic. I haven't, obviously too early to get some sense of what the change has meant, and pretty short notice. Usually they give a couple of days. This time it was right back to level one. But I think we'll see a lift in people using public transport. I hope so, because otherwise the roadways will be more congested. For most of our things like libraries, we'd opened already, Zoo, Motat, etc. So almost all of our services will be open, but there'll be some phased opening for some community venues and some pool services, I understand, because of just adjusting to get staff in place, etc. But, pretty much, I think, for everything except our borders now, we'll be back to normal. And I think kind of psychologically, we'd already made that change in our heads. Mm. People are starting to shake hands and hug again, which is kind of nice. You know, yeah. It was sort of awkward, that social distancing thing. It was important that we did it.
Yeah. Wanting people to take some precautions at the council facilities?
I think the critical thing is we need to maintain some idea of where we've been so that facilitate contact tracing. Look, because we've got no active cases, no new cases, that's fantastic, but nobody would be brave enough to say, look, there won't be some other case that will happen, maybe from somebody returning home, even though, you know, quarantine will be quite strict and there'll be testing both at the beginning and end of quarantine. But, you know, generally other countries have found that it just takes one case to come in that's infectious, and then suddenly you've got a cluster going again. So the hygiene standards should be maintained, you know, all the etiquette about, look, if you're ill, don't come into work, don't be a hero and think I'll struggle in with my flu and keep on going. If you've got a flu, you've got a cold, stay at home. If you've got a temperature, take precautions. Don't travel on public transport if you're not feeling well. All of those sort of things. Wash your hands frequently. You know, some of those habits were good habits to get into, so we'll try and maintain that. Because while we might be COVID-19 free, all but 9 countries in the world aren't.
Yeah.
So all of those other countries, including our cousins across the Tasman, they've still got new cases, and we have to be really careful. The big challenge for government now is, what do we start to do to reopen our borders in a precautionary way? And, you know, look, I know they've got a lot of flack over things like Avatar, but look, we've brought in workers that were necessary for the City Rail Link to progress. They had expert tunnelling knowledge and skills, and we needed them.
Mm.
Avatar, it's not about, it's about creating hundreds and hundreds of jobs. Same with Lord of the Rings. You know, I've looked at the studios for Lord of the Rings, and we are, you know, I think there's 1,300 Auckland jobs involved in that. And if you can't get your key people to come back in, and you're holding off, recreating those jobs, we're not doing a service to Auckland. International students, if we can quarantine them in the same way that returning New Zealanders are quarantined, why wouldn't you do that? Mm. You know, Auckland University down 100 million, having to lay off staff. International students are, you know, they're worth 2.8 billion to the city. So don't throw caution out the window.
Yeah.
Be precautionary, but start to, in a sensible and safe way, to get the economy moving again, I think that's probably, you know, that's certainly where I'm at, and I hope other people are at as well.
We are seeing a lot of effects of COVID-19 across the economy, and we've seen a huge amount of funding cuts to the council. So I wanted to understand, how do you guys decide what is a priority in terms of continuing the projects?
Yeah, well, I guess, sadly, the first priority is that when you've lost, as we have, $525 million in the coming financial year, mainly from non-rate revenue, so, you know, it's things like dividends, it's transport fares, it's revenue from venues, it's development contributions, you can't just pretend it hasn't happened. We're obliged, both for prudent financial management and under law, to balance our budget. So, yeah, we've had to go all out to find savings. Now, we started with, you know, top salary earners have taken up to a 20% cut in their salaries, both elected and professional employees. We've put a freeze on employment. Probably about 700 of our 1,100 temporary workers and short-term contract workers have gone already, and the remainder will just work out their contract over the next few weeks or months. We are going to have to narrow down our workforce, which is tough on people individually that may lose their jobs. It hurts to do that, but, you know, that's where a whole lot of our expenditure goes, of course, in staffing. We've got to find services that aren't vital. So, you know, it may be that we don't do as many renewals on our footpaths and roads as we would otherwise have done. It may mean that we don't replace playground equipment in the way that we used to, or repair tracks, walking tracks. You know, these are all temporary measures.
Yeah,
but
I was going to ask.
That are needed to save money.
Being temporary, what do you foresee for increasing the funding again if the borders do remain closed for some time? How do you expect to turn that around?
I'm an eternal optimist. You can't be in politics, I think, without being an optimist. And I think that with the return to level one more quickly than we expected, things getting back to normal here, we are probably leaning towards a... We've worked on a most likely scenario in terms of what cuts we had to make, and cuts in capital programs as well, and building construction. I don't think we'll get to worst case scenario in terms of drop in GDP or increase in employment, unemployment. But they'll still be real problems. You know, just saw sometimes it's not necessarily COVID related, but the warehouse has just laid off 1,000 people, and you know, Bauer Media went under. But both of those things, you know, the owners have basically said would have happened regardless of COVID. But people are using this as an opportunity to say, well, look, we need to make these changes. Bit more financial pressure, we'll do it now. So, look, I think that we still will face some pretty hard times financially, but they might not be as bad as the worst-case scenarios that we were looking at, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago might have expected. So... If it gets better, then, you know, the cuts that we have to make will be less than we were intending to. But we have to budget on real information that we have at the time and make the best estimate we can. It will get better too if the government gives a bit more money through these shovel-ready projects, but they haven't made that announcement yet, and we can't build any money that we might get from them to help with some of our construction projects into our budget until that money is signed, sealed and delivered. So we've got to go out, budget realistically, and then if things get better more quickly, or the government puts in a bit more money, that's a bonus. And then, you know, some of the cuts that we're needing to make, and some of the deferrals that we're having to make and spending on big works on environment, transport, housing, well, those deferrals will be less and the cuts will be less. So, you know, we hope for that, but we've got a plan for, you know, what we know we're going to get now, not what we hope to get.
Just before we move on to talk about the drought, I just wanted to ask, in regards to cutting funding. We've seen a lot of reports of the contracted council cleaners being paid 80% of their pay and petitioning to be paid the rest of it. Is that something you'd consider prioritising?
No, because they're not employed by us. They're employed by contractors, and contractors received a wage subsidy, and they received the subsidy for 12 weeks, and those cleaners were back at work well before the end of that 12-week period. So the onus is on the contractors to use the money they got from government to make good the difference, not on council to bail the contractors out. I'm fighting still to get contracted cleaners up to a living wage over this term of council. Won't be easy because of the hits that we've taken in our income, but I cannot take over the responsibility of the contractors who received the wage subsidy. We didn't get the wage subsidy, the contractors did, and the responsibility lies with them, not on council. And, you know, the fact is, a whole lot of our staff, we've asked our staff to take voluntary wage cuts, and well over half of our staff at council have agreed to do that, which is pretty phenomenal. You know, this is not mandatory, it's voluntary, but, you know, they're taking, I mean, everybody took a hit in this, and it's important that we all share in that sacrifice. I feel for the cleaners, but that responsibility lies with the contractors, not with us.
And I just want to quickly touch on the drought before we let you go. Given that we have had some heavy rain, has this made a difference, and can we expect the restrictions to be lifted anytime soon?
No. The answer, short answer to your two questions. Look, we're sitting on 45% now. We were as low as 43%, but the sum total of that rain was to lift our lakes by 2%. Because the ground is so dry, it soaks the rain up like blotting paper. We didn't get the heavy rain that Northland got and the Coromandel got. We have managed to... We're still trying to keep our demand down. Our new target is 410 million litres a day. We're averaging under that on a seven-day rolling average. But we've got coming up from tomorrow 7 days without rain. You know, I can't remember a winter period, a June period, where you had 7 days without rain. The weather keeps on denying us the rainfall that we would normally get. And extends the effective drought period and makes the prospect of a crisis next summer more likely. Now, we hope like hell that it will rain, but we can't just rely on that. So, you know, my guess would be short of torrential rain, which doesn't appear on the horizon anywhere at the moment, we'll have to move up the chain of calling for greater constraint rather than move in the opposite direction. We're trying to get water from everywhere we can, including increasing our take from the Waikato, which is partly restricted by resource consents and partly by the ability of our current treatment plant and pipe to cope. But I am really worried about the coming summer.
Does that put pressure in place to improve those systems so that we can take water from the Waikato?
Absolutely, and you know, at the moment we're pulling what they call non-potable water, not non-drinkable water, out of Lake Pupuki, out of on the shore, out of Western Springs, out of the Three Kings Aquifer for construction use. So construction isn't using good quality water from the lakes. We are building a small water treatment plant to use the Hayes Creek Dam in Papakura, which will lift the amount we can take there. We've reopened bores in Pukekohe and built a new reservoir there. We're trying to do as much as we can. We're looking at removing the need for resource consents on water tanks, which sort of add to the cost of people putting their own water tank in for their garden or their water or their toilet systems. Probably should have been done ages ago, actually. But we're pushing every lever that we've got available to us. But believe me, in some senses, I worry more about this coming summer if the low rainfall persists. You know, it's a 1 in 200 year occasion. Maybe it'll be more often with climate change. You know, we've got to build in resilience for that. But in the short term, in 6 months, we'll do whatever we can, but we can't do major capital building programs in that period. And we can't do the major capital building program for the water from the Waikato without getting a resource consent. And we've been waiting a long time for that. And there's a fair amount of opposition in the Waikato to giving it too. So, you know, those are some of the problems. But I've asked I've asked Watercare to treat this as an emergency, because I believe with the ongoing low rainfall, that's exactly where we'll be.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Gough. And Rachel will be back with you next week, I believe. But talk to you
good
soon.
Good to talk, Tess. And good news on the COVID front and not so good news on the weather front.
Enjoy okay. your level one.
Thank you very much, and you too, and the listeners. Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.